You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in San Marino.
Victor, we saw you have a mechanical. Was that the difference, or could it be the difference between victory and second place today?
Yeah, it was still, 10 seconds between Primoz and me. And I cannot say what the real time difference was. We will never know.
And what actually happened? Was it a chain dropping?
Yeah, chain drop. And then we did a bike change, and we didn't really plan to do a bike change, of course. And then, it was a bit of stress, and we tried to make the best out of it. Second is, of course, a good result, but the difference between winning and second is huge.
And sometimes the chain drop can be the rider's fault. Sometimes it can be the chain's fault. In this case, which one was it?
I don't know.
Verona next. That's the next goal for you, yeah?
Yeah, let's make sure I don't have a chain drop in Verona. I'm 100% sure that the parcours of Verona will suit me better than this parcours, and I'm also confident that Primoz will suffer more in the mountain stages than I will do in the Gruppetto, so I'm excited to go to Verona.
Well, that was Victor Campanets, the European time trial champion, the world hour record holder, rueing the fact that he had a mechanical problem on the climb and he swapped his bike, and well, the push off from his team mechanic with Lotto Soudal was not the best, and the bike was on the big ring, not ideal when he had to get going on the uphill. And he said that the only reason he wasn't going to change his bike, Victor Campanets, but he chose to do so when he had a slight issue with the time trial bike, but it didn't work out for him. And you could arguably say, Daniel, that Victor Campanets would have won the stage in San Marino today, but for that mechanical problem, because he finished only 11 seconds behind Primoz Roglic.
Was it all very serious, Lionel?
Well, I'm back at the Giro, Daniel. I've had my 2-day holiday.
Yeah. How did it go in old Watford?
It didn't go that well in old Watford.
You got a bagel, didn't you? Six love.
Well, we've lost the first set. We'll play Manchester City again next year. Maybe try and get one on the scoreboard. The first five were very lucky, to be fair. But no, a great weekend away, to be fair. I'm saying to be fair a lot because I'm talking about football. I wouldn't have changed anything about the day apart from the result, of course. I'm slightly suspicious now of Team UAE Emirates, because, you know, they're owned by the same people as Manchester City, and you know, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to look them in the eye.
We're losing listeners by the second here. We desperately need to get back to the old cycling.
Well, where are we, Daniel?
Well, we're in Riccione. The weather's grim, as it's been throughout the Giro. This is the I don't care what anyone says. People have been trying to tell me all week that they've seen other Grand Tours with weather this bad. It's fake news. So we're in Riccione on the Adriatic coast. We're in Romagna now. We're in Pantani country. We went to San Marino today, which I'm informed is a different country officially. We're still not sure about we still don't know our principalities from our crown dependencies and other kinds of, you know, slightly suspicious tax haven type places.
What
do we think? What do we make of San Marino?
I thought the climb was very interesting. There was a slight Andorran feel up there, but maybe that's because the last time I was in Andorra, the weather was very bad. The rain today was extraordinary at one point, wasn't it? I don't think any riders got away lightly. Everybody got wet at some point, I think. But should I do the tale of the tapo?
Well, you should probably mention who won the stage, won the bike race.
Do you still do this now?
Yeah, I did it yesterday. Am I allowed to talk in the tale of the tapo?
You are. You can chip in wherever you want. Well, Primoz Roglic won the stage. He strengthened his grip on the Giro d'Italia, although he's not back in the pink jersey just yet. Valerio Conti held on to the pink jersey. But Roglic really, he kind of crushed everybody, didn't he? He won the stage, as I say, by 11 seconds from Victor Campanets. Bauke Mollema did a great ride to finish third, a minute back. Vincenzo Nibali, a minute and five back. And then, well, the riders we were expecting to challenge Roglic faded away, particularly Simon Yates, who had a very bad day. He described it as a stinker. He lost 3 minutes and 11 seconds. But Miguel Angel Lopez as well, Astana's rider, not so who? Super.
Who? Miguel Angel Lopez? Oh, you mean Superman. Sorry.
Yeah, well, he was 3 minutes 45 down. He had a puncture on the flat section, but didn't manage to recover those losses on the uphill. So, as I say, Valerio Conti still in pink. Roglic now a minute and 50 back. But really, the story is that he enjoys a healthy lead over all of the other GC riders. The closest man to him that you could consider a potential winner of this Giro is Vincenzo Nibali, who is at 1 minute 44. Mollema's at 1 minute 55. They're the only two riders within a couple of minutes of Roglic. And Simon Yates now is 3 minutes 46 down. Not the day he was hoping for at all. But the question now is whether or not Roglic has done enough to win the Giro.
Well, of course he hasn't, Lionel. Anyone who says that he has is talking nonsense. Because, you know, we've mentioned his lack of... Well, relative lack of experience in Grand Tours. He's only ridden three. He's one of those Grand Tours was the Giro d'Italia, in which he won the time trial, the equivalent time trial, but he wasn't by any means going for general classification. His team is, I don't think it's being unkind to say they're brittle, and they lost Robert Hasink in the run up to the Giro. They've lost Laurens de Plus, and they're inexperienced in the mountains. And you know, we've seen in the last few years, haven't we? The Giro tends to pivot on the last weekend, or certainly in the last four or five stages.
It certainly does. Well, 2016, of course, Vincenzo Nibali turned the tables first on Steven Kruiswijk and then on Esteban Chavez to win the race in the final 3 days. The year after that, Tom Dumoulin was momentarily upset by Nairo Quintana and then got back into control and clinched victory in the final time trial. And last year, of course, Simon Yates was on the receiving end of that long-range Chris Froome attack after sustained pressure. He collapsed and Froome won the Giro. So we're used to the race coming down to those final few days. But the thing about Roglic is he's in such a commanding position already. But as you pointed out, Daniel, only three Grand Tours that he's completed or even started. It's not like he's got 8 or 10 in his legs. He hasn't got that bank of experience to fall back on. And, well, his results, 2016, the year that he won that Giro time trial, he finished 58th overall. The following year, he finished 38th in the Tour de France. And last year, of course, 4th in the Tour de France. So it's not like it's an established Grand Tour contender who's worked himself into an unassailable position.
No, Napalm, and I think you could be very confident about Roglic's chances if he was only being shot at from one direction. If there was only one rival left in contention, and people might say that that's Nibali now, because Yates performed so poorly today, and Superman struggled as well. But I think collective strength is going to be absolutely vital in this Giro. I think that the Movistar pair of Carapaz and Landa are still flying under the radar, and I think although they've lost time, or they've lost, certainly Landa's lost a bit of time in this first week, I still think they're really dangerous if they pull resources. And I think Astana is still incredibly dangerous, even more so after today's time trial, because Peo Bilbao is riding very high indeed.
He's 10th overall. Yeah.
And Peo Bilbao, Napalm, he's won a stage already. That stage was almost gifted to him by Beppe Martinelli, the DS, the multi-Giro winning DS of Astana, to kind of keep him on side to make sure that he sacrifices his chances for Superman Lopez. But Peo Bilbao has got a massive engine. Peo Bilbao, I'm saying his name a lot, aren't I? for emphasis. Last year, he won a stage of the Dauphiné about 10 days after finishing sixth in the Giro. Not many riders do the Dauphiné after doing the Giro. And to me, that just shows that he's someone who can digest a big workload. And especially if, you know, with the long stages that we've seen in this Giro, it's going to be the diesels that really come to the fore.
That's a really interesting point, because Primoz Roglic, he's looks so good so far. He's done everything you would expect of him if he's, you know, manoeuvring into position. He's the kind of he's the de facto race leader, isn't he? Because Valerio Conti's not going to hold out once the race reaches the really big mountains. But Roglic has been hot since the Tour of Romandy, which is already a fat end of 3 weeks ago. So staying power is going to be absolutely critical for Roglic, because all of the racing is going to be in the last 10 or 11 days here.
Is he still hot to trot? I asked his Jumbo-Visma Direct Sportif Jan Boven after the finish today.
I think when you see the result today, the form is still there. You say flatty days. I don't think it was really flatty. It was a lot of stress in the peloton some days. Also some hectic finals, some crashes before. It was a really Giro race the first week. Now we have, after the rest, a few more easy days. And then we start the second part of the Giro with the climbs.
And what were the key points that you and Adi Engels made to Primoz this morning? What did he have to really bear in mind today?
We don't make it directly today. It was also before. After the Tirreno, we did a recon. We saw a really nice parkour, even better now with nice roads in Italy. They make it really new. That was a nice surprise. And yeah, for sure, the structure of the parkour was really fit Primoz. Yeah, we had a strategy. We changed a little bit the strategy when it started really hard raining in the start. And we need to do it easy the first 11K to the first intermediate. From there, the more straight lines. And from there, it was all out to the finish.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon's Ram.
In my bib shorts, I tend to look for a lot of padding. I'm Logan Owen, and I'm a cyclist for EF Education First Pro Cycling Team. Usually with a lot of padding comes a lot of comfort, and the Rafa bib shorts do a good job of having good padding and create a lot of comfort. So far, the best bib shorts I've ridden up to this point in my career of cycling, so yeah, it's been a real comfy year.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. The first Pédalage de Charme award has been made, and it is Marco Frapporti. The public nominated him and the public decided, and he has won the Pédalage de Charme jersey for helping Larry Warbass put on his rain jacket. Now, how can people go about getting their own Pédalage de Charme t-shirt?
Easy. Help Larry Warbass put on his rain jacket. You're kind of giving away the cheat code. It's not
well,
difficult.
If you fancy getting a Pédalage de Charme t-shirt or a Pédaleurs de Charme t-shirt, just help Larry Warbass into a rain jacket. There'll be plenty of opportunities over the next few days in this Giro because the weather's not set to improve very much. But seriously, if you would like to buy a t-shirt or jersey or cap, go to rafa.cc. We will present Frapporti with his prize when the race resumes in a couple of days' time. Now, you mentioned Astana, Daniel, and their twin-pronged attack. They're not the only team with a couple of riders reasonably well-placed still. Movistar have got Carapaz and Landa, but Landa's effectively last on GC, really, of the
big
favourites.
Do you know why this isn't a problem? Because I was speaking to Max Chandri, or the Movistar DS, the other day, and do you know what he said about Landa? That he needs adversity. He needs to be put in the corner in order to spring out of the corner. I'm inventing my own really terrible idiom here. And I don't really know what Max is basing it on, but he sees more of Landa than I do, so let's go with it.
Well, Landa is 6 minutes 42 down. It just makes me wonder, why don't they, on stage one, just make Landa come in 6 minutes down?
Well, Napalm, to make a serious point, Simon Yates had an absolute shocker today. However, I think that Simon Yates almost becomes more of a danger now to Primoz Roglic, and the same applies to Mikel Landa. The fact that they're a long way back, they're two very attacking riders, two riders who are willing to go from a long way out, and they will be, well, not just emboldened now, but they need to. They need to do something remarkable to unseat and unsettle Primoz Roglic, and they will try to do it. Simon Yates yesterday complained to us. Well, he said that he had a bit of an issue with his left leg. There's no real indication from what we've heard from his team that was what hampered him today. He just said that he kind of felt blocked. He just felt his legs weren't really spinning smoothly. But if he still has decent legs, then I think he'll move on to the offensive pretty quickly.
Yeah, mustn't underestimate the challenge today. The cold temperatures, the water that was falling from the sky, but also splashing up from the road, making everybody cold. And different people respond in different ways to that. Yates, you know, coped very well in the opening time trial in Bologna with the transition from the fast flat bit to the climbing section, but today he just wasn't on the same level as Primoz Roglic, so he has time to make up. But he's very much on his own in Mitchelton Scott, whereas Astana have two riders who could really create uncertainty and chaos going forward.
Well, it looks like that. I mean, there was definitely half an idea at Mitchelton Scott to keep Esteban Chavez as high at the general classification as possible. He didn't have a fantastic time trial today. You wouldn't expect him to have, you know, to be up there challenging the leaders. Where did he finish, Napalm? If you can find that for
Esteban
me.
Esteban Chavez was in 33rd position, three minutes 13 down.
Not a disaster. So, you know,
only 3 seconds worse than Yates.
Yeah, he's still in a position where if he goes down the road, he becomes a danger, because no one really knows how Chavez is riding. He's had a year where he's been hampered by Epstein-Barr, or were they just calling it? Yes. A mononucleosis type virus, and he has performed pretty sporadically since then, so that will, if he does go down the road, that will create uncertainty. They've also got Mikel Nieve, who is riding incredibly well, we've been told, but he's not really a rider that you employ in that role, is he, as a kind of Trojan horse to go down the road. So, you know, they don't have quite the same options, I would suggest, as a Movistar or certainly Astana.
Well, Astana, you spoke to their Bond villain boss.
No, we're not calling that. He's a friend of the podcast.
Alexander Vinokurov.
Well, I'm not sure he's a friend. But I'm not sure he knows we exist. However, I did speak to him at the finisher. It's not the end of the world. The Giro's not over. It'll be over in Verona. We've still got all the mountain stages to come, and hopefully we'll regroup tomorrow on the rest day. We're definitely still in it. We saw with Nibali in 2016. He had 5 minutes to make up, and he did it. Like I said, the Giro finishes in Verona, and it started today. We've done nothing so far. The last week is really, really hard. We saw how guys fell away one by one last year, so we have to keep our heads up.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, interrupting our Giro coverage to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Cyclist magazine. Now, all of our listeners can get 3 issues of the monthly magazine for £1 each. That's 3 months of the best rides, bikes and exclusive insights for the price that's less than the cost of a flat white or an afternoon cappuccino. Oh.
They've got some wonderful contributors as well, Cyclist magazine.
Funny you should mention that, Rich, because I was flicking through this month's magazine and under the headline, "Where are the Italians?" it says, "Words Richard Moore." And I thought, that can't be you. I knew it was
you. I do
a
monthly feature for Cyclist magazine. Yes, a great magazine it is too. Did you anything interest you in that article, yeah, or did you feel like you'd heard it all before?
No, it was a really interesting look at the decline in the number of Italian teams. Well, there's no Italian teams in the World Tour at the moment, and well, the Giro started back in Bologna, didn't it? And 25 years ago, when the Giro last began in Bologna, 12 of the 17 teams were Italian, and the Italian scene was a lot stronger as a result. And it's all withered away, and your article kind of digs into the reasons behind that, and well, tries to look at what it might take to revive the scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very optimistic, and Max Chiandri, the sports director at Movistar, painted a pretty bleak picture about the prospects for Italian cycling recovering. You know, you look back at that at Giro 25 years ago, and there was a young Pantani, there was Claudio Chiappucci, there was Gianni Bugno, there was a whole galaxy of stars. It's not just my article in Cyclist magazine, of course, Lionel, it's worth reading. Very interesting interview with Simon Gerrans, recently retired Simon Gerrans, who's now working for Goldman Sachs in London and living in London and riding his bike in Richmond Park and settling in, it seems. And he said a few interesting things in there about his old team. Mitchelton Scott said it's very sad that he doesn't feel it's really an Australian team anymore, obviously focused around the Yates twins and the Grand Tour ambitions. And that was quite interesting because he was quite closely identified to that team from its inception, really. And he also hints at some of the problems that he had with Michael Matthews, not so much him, but team management, whether it be at the professional team or at his national team, imagining that you can have two leaders and that you can sort of make a decision on the road, and he just talks about the impossibility of that. Mentions his two monument wins as well, Milan-San Remo and Liège-Bastogne-Liège, where he, when he looks at the pitch of the podium, he thinks that he's the sort of least talented or least decorated rider there, and that gives him a certain sort of pride in the way that he won those races, really by outfoxing people. So that was a really interesting interview with him.
Yoel, if you would like to get three issues of Cyclist magazine for just £3, go to cyclistmag.co.uk/podcast and you can claim your three issues for just £3. That's cyclistmag.co.uk/podcast.
Gianni, what's the formation today?
Today, not moduli, impossible, because trial time, so we away tomorrow.
Gianni, I made a video the other day of you running after Fausto Masnada's stage victory, and it was Bruce Springsteen singing Born to Run.
Yes, many compliments, because with Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run, very, very, very interesting.
But Gianni, you run every morning, don't you, at the Giro? You go run. You go for a little run in the morning, don't you?
Yes, not in the morning, but in the evening. In the morning, I like sleep, but in the evening, yes, not during the Giro, because I am very, very busy, so during the Giro, a little bit.
Only when you win the stage.
Yes. But when I am in my home, normally 2-3 kilometers each day.
Well, Daniel, Gianni Savio's formation for the time trial, very predictable. One up front, one just behind, one behind that, one behind that, one in goal.
Yes, Lionel, but he was in good form, wasn't he, Gianni, the boss? You know, I'm sure there'll be more glory days for him later in the Giro.
I'm not surprised. He's had a stage win. He might have done a bit of transfer business.
I'm sure, yeah, he's always doing transfer business. Let's face it.
He's the Harry Redknapp of Italian cycling.
Yes, he is. But his boys, we won't call them bombers today, but weren't really his bombers today. His GC guys, Cattaneo did a good ride today. Lionel, I'd like you to tell me how Masnada got on.
Masnada, oh, my eyesight. I've been up a long, long time today. He was in 27th place. Not too bad, 2 minutes 55 down, and remains in 5th place overall. Pretty good.
Very good. And Gianni is still talking about a possible top 10 finish for one or both of those two guys. I mean, so far to go. They don't have a huge amount of 3-week experience, although Masnada did ride the Giro last year and did okay. So keep your eye on them.
Two other riders who had a good day today, two young British riders, James Knox.
Foxy Noxy.
And Hugh Carthy, got a nickname for him?
No.
Well, James Knox had a couple of crashes in the first week. He was kind of the man at the bottom of the pile 2 days running, wasn't he? Saw him picking himself up off the road.
Stages 3 and 4.
Yeah, and always bad that, isn't it? When you see a rider involved in a couple of crashes in sort of quick succession, you think, oh, is there luck out? This is his first Grand Tour, of course, for De Koninck Quickstep, and he did pretty well today. But Daniel, you spoke to him and also to Hugh Carthy, who was absolutely outstanding today in 8th place. Hugh Carthy, just 1 minute 29 down on Primoz Roglic, and still riding pretty high in the overall, really. Where is he? Let's scroll up here. He's still in 16th place.
And by the sounds of it, about to embark on the first real GC campaign of his World Tour career.
For EF Education First, of course, he is their best placed rider at this point. And, well, he's a good climber, isn't he? He will do well in the mountains at some point. Remember last year he was in the break on the stage to Gran Sasso d'Italia, wasn't he?
Yes.
The first of the big, big mountain stages last year. It'll be interesting to see how he goes. But you spoke to both of them today. I think James Knox this morning and Hugh Carthy this evening.
It seemed okay, no broken bones, no major road rash or anything, but I bashed my knee pretty hard on the one on stage 4, went down quite bad, and the bruising, the swelling seems to like riding on it basically isn't much fun. I've been in quite a bit of pain. I can't, I haven't been able to get on the saddle basically for the last 3 days. So I've been in my own little world of suffering, just making all those little accelerations in the saddle and just trying to save it as much as possible. But I made it to today, which for me was a big achievement because I was thinking about throwing in the towel a couple of days ago, yeah. But I'm here so I can have a bit of a shorter day today, rest day tomorrow, and then a couple more easy days, Tuesday, Wednesday, I believe. So we'll see if it gets better. I'm doing everything I can. I'm going to try and get some salt water on it tomorrow, get in the sea, and ice and all the standard anti-inflammatories and all this. But it's just a shame, really, because it's kind of like making everything, it's hard enough as it is, and it's making it less enjoyable. It's a completely different story now that basically I'm just in my own little world at the moment. The team's leaving me just to try and survive and get better day by day. I've been able to help or to do anything really for stages 5, 6, 7, and 8. What are we on now?
9, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, the last like 4 days I've really just tried to recover and get back to normal. So yeah, in that sense, well, I don't really know what I was expecting, but I wasn't really envisaging this, I guess. But
I mean, has it been different to other World Tour races you've done? I mean, I guess the weather's been a factor. I mean, everyone's saying it's a boring race, but in the peloton, it's been super stressful, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, I guess it's been boring because like the action's still to come, and guys are trying to play a coy game of I'm rooming with Bob, and you know, like you see like his attitude towards where the important moments of this race are going to be. Like, there's no point really wasting everything on a gamble. You know today's going to be really important, so I guess the same mentality for everyone else, so the big GC guys. And yeah, there's not been huge fireworks so far, but there's been difficult weather, difficult roads, and a lot of stress also.
And you know this area pretty well, don't you? You've trained here a lot. You even know San Marino. You're one of the rare people in the world that's been to San Marino.
No, I'm really happy to be back here. We're about half an hour south of where I was based for a couple of years with Team Zappies as an under 23. We were like Cervia Cesenatico, and we used to do, for some reason, San Marino was like our favorite long ride. I don't really know why. We were pretty boring. We could have explored a lot more, but whenever we wanted to go out for a long ride, we'd go straight to San Marino. So we used to come up from the other side and go down where we're gonna do our final bit of ascent today. I don't really know the first like two-thirds so well because we never used to come back onto coast because it's just busy with cars and city. But yeah, no, it's really nice to be back here. I've got a lot of nice memories, and I know it's kind of just like a special place. I feel like I came down here to pursue being a cyclist and come full circle to be here now at the Giro. Kind of satisfying thinking about it.
I mean, how interested did you become, or how much did you know about the kind of myth of Pantani, you know, living in or spending 2 years in this region? Did you kind of get into all of that?
Obviously I was a fan already, so I knew, I know, knew enough about Pantani. But then been in Cesenatico, there's the museum, there's like a little revolving, they had like a little revolving statue model thing of him outside the train station even, and the museum there, and just all the like different Pantani still written on the roads on different climbs. We used to have like a little test climb. We used to do the Pantani climb. I think they do it in the Memorial Pantani, and there's another road near Cesena with Pantani written all over the names. I'm not sure about the names. We used to just call it the Pantani climb. So but yeah, there's a lot of history around here with Pantani in it. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
No, I'm not shit, you know what I mean? I think in the right circumstances with the right kind of pressure, you can always get the best out of yourself. Oh, I don't know exactly how there's a few riders yet to come yet, so I'll see.
Top 10.
Yeah, happy with that. Another good performance, but the Giro's still pretty long. It's not really started yet, so. And
it was a time trial of two halves. Some guys, you know, decided to give everything on that. Well, really, go deep on the flat. Some on the climb. What was your strategy?
I try and go quite hard early on, get Chavez in sight, and use him as a reference on the climb. And yeah, I almost caught him at the start of the climb, so I kind of sat within range of him for a few minutes, and then eventually I managed to pass him and put distance into him. Nice. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it when you got the radio on you and you can hear how you're going, and got some good motivation.
Hugh, yeah. You've had a good few months. How much has your confidence grown in the last 3 or 4 months? You really sort of grown into.
Yeah, it's not just the past few months, the past few years. Sometimes people don't really see it. They think, oh, it's going shit, you finish Gruppetto every day, last year's Giro, whatever. But yeah, yeah, every year a little bit stronger, and you find your place in the peloton and become more, yeah, more confident, you know, more people and things. And yeah, it's a long process. I mean, hopefully I'm only at the start of my career, but yeah, see how it goes, keep progressing and not put too much pressure on myself.
Riding GC here?
I don't know, I think I'm showing good signs at the moment. Things look good, but yeah, you could lose 20 minutes one day and have a bad day or get a bad stomach or something. You just never know what can happen. But yeah, I think we'll go with that mentality at the moment, try and save as much energy as possible when you can, and see how things unfold.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. If you'd like to get 25% off all of their products, go to scienceinsport.com and enter the discount code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. Now, Daniel, lots of British cyclists, indeed cyclists from all over the place, will know Riccione very well, won't they? It's quite popular destination for training camps and that kind of thing. It's a holiday resort, isn't it, here? And it does, because of the weather, it feels a little bit out of season, but perhaps buzzier than buzzier than some of the other places in the south that we were in last week.
Yes, Lionel, a lot of hotels here that are set up for cyclists, and I think a lot of British cyclists come here. Nice roads when you go inland. Marco Pantani's old training roads. Today was the wine stage, decent wine, and the wine stage for me this year has lacked a bit of oomph, so much so that there wasn't really any to taste in the press room. I mean, this is all vital, I know.
What were they doing? What were they thinking?
I don't know. It was the Sangiovese wine stage. Sangiovese, as we've mentioned, is just, I mean, it's a grape variety that is very common in the centre of Italy. Not necessarily at its best in Romagna, in this region. It's probably a better example of Sangiovese you can probably find in south of Tuscany, in Montalcino, in a Brunello, or a good something in the west of Tuscany.
Do you know how the wine stage gets selected?
No, I don't, but our friend Pier Bergonzi, the vice editor, vice director, deputy editor of the Gazzetta dello Sport, wasn't around today, and I was hoping to feature him on the podcast because he's kind of instrumental in the whole idea of the wine stage. But we like it, don't we? I mean, we've given it big licks over the last couple of years.
Well, a couple of years ago, Montefalco was sensational, wasn't it? I think there was a Chianti stage the year before that. Last year was last year Barolo?
Last year was Franciacorta.
Right.
Just on the subject of Romagna, the region we're in today, Sangiovese, and Marco Pantani, who I mentioned, who lived and was born and raised and trained just up the road in Cesenatico. When Pantani died, so it's 15 years since Marco Pantani's death, the most poignant and most memorable for me piece that was written after Pantani's death was by Gianni Mura, also known in the press room as Punto, because he still comes to the Tour de France, particularly, he doesn't really come from the Giro, and he still types with his old Olivetti typewriter. He, until very recently, he would read out the copy still to his office back in Rome, La Repubblica, and a full stop in Italian is Punto. So you'd hear him say, punto, bah, 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 punto, and hence the nickname. However, the final paragraph of his kind of ode, his obituary to Pantani, it said, Pantani will become a myth, probably, like all of those who die too soon, like all of those who die for reasons that we don't understand. I would have preferred to see him get old and drink a glass of Sangiovese with him somewhere up there on his hills.
Yeah, so this is his neck of the woods, isn't it? Just up the road, isn't it? It's not a particularly beautiful town, is it, Cesenatico? But famous for being Marco Pantani's hometown. Daniel, you mentioned the weather and how bad the weather had been. I'd like to see your working out to back up your claim that this has been the worst Grand Tour of all time, weather-wise, so far. I mean, evidence?
No, there is no evidence, but I really don't remember one. I mean, people have been telling me all week that the 2013 Giro was terrible. I was here and I don't recall it being this bad. I wasn't at the 96 Tour de France, which was by all accounts terrible. And I think the bad weather then Well, it lasted until the Alps, certainly. And so it was about 10 days, similar to here. But there's no significant improvement on the horizon here.
Not weather-wise, but what about the race? Because people have been saying, my memory of the last couple of years has been that people have said the first week has been incredibly boring and it's the worst Giro ever. And that people are saying the same thing again. I don't think the 2017 first week was all that much, but because the final week was so sensational, we kind of forget what happened in the first half of the race.
No, I think 2017 was far superior in terms of drama line. I mean, what I think that this Giro has lacked has been stages that just create a doubt in the minds of the spectators and the teams and the riders about whether it is going to be the kind of day that entices the GC contenders into battle. You know, small climbs towards the end of stages, which could work out either way, which the sprinters could get over and they could all finish together, or, you know, which could give rise to a surprise attack. And there hasn't been enough of that. And particularly, you know, you look at yesterday's stage from Tortoreto Lido to Pesaro, just a short distance inland. So it was, I mean, it went from coast to coast, really, or the same coastline yesterday, but sort of went inland. And those are kind of the roads that are often used in the Tirreno Adriatico, well-known and beloved to Mauro Vegni, the race director of the Giro. He worked on the route of the Tirreno long before he became the Giro director. And those routes are notorious for featuring sort of short, steep climbs, exactly the kind of climb that I'm talking about. Ones where, you know, on a good day, a sprinter might get over them, or, you know, with good work from his team or whatever. But on a bad day, they can completely decimate a peloton. And I just thought on a stage like yesterday, there should have been something in the finale, especially on a weekend.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make. It feels very unusual to have a kind of first weekend without some kind of mountain or GC shake-up. Yes, today's time trial has done quite a lot of damage to quite a lot of riders today. Probably all bar Vincenzo Nibali will be looking at it thinking that they've conceded more ground than they would have wished. But it hasn't been, you know, man against man. We've seen that Primoz Roglic is in great form, and we have to see whether that's too much too soon. But I wonder why Vegni and co have done that this year, when I know that the races don't get designed as a consequence of the race we've just seen, so they won't have designed this year's race immediately after seeing last year's. But the drama that Simon Yates being lured into that battle to win seconds in the first week created was pretty spectacular, really, and it set him up for a fall, probably. Whereas here, you wonder, what is it, because the final 8 or 9 days are so tough that they've decided to make it a relatively benign, at least in terms of the obvious, they've made it a relatively benign opening to the race.
Yeah, and I think part of it was a calculation about the sprinters that they could attract. Mm. And, you know, I think that the Grand Tour contenders have almost made their decision before routes are released and unveiled. They might alternate, they might do Giro 1 year, Tour the next year, and even if you plot a route that's quite congenial to them, they will stick to their plans. Not always the case.
I mean, the one exception with Tom Dumoulin
was an exception to that. But I think when it comes to the sprinters, they're very susceptible to having their heads turned by a Giro with lots of opportunities in the first 12 stages, because really there's nothing to lose for them if they do the first 10 or 12 stages. You know, it's a great practice almost for the Tour de France. It's very prestigious if you win a stage, and doing 10 or 12 stages is not going to tie you to the extent that it compromises your Tour build-up. And I think, you know, they achieved their goal at the Giro this year of getting maybe 7 of the top 10 sprinters in the world here.
Yeah, but we haven't quite seen the sort of battle royale between them yet. But there's two great opportunities after the rest day with these very flat stages. Elia Viviani, the Italian champion, yet to get off the mark here, of course. So there's still plenty there to look forward to in the sprinting stakes. But I do wonder if Viviani had won a couple of stages already, and if the sun had shone, maybe the feel-good factor around the race would be, you know, elevated that little bit. Because it's those types of things that do, you know, create the buzz around the race and get the people out to watch, isn't it? I mean, when the weather's miserable, the crowds are smaller, and if the Italians aren't doing well, the crowds are smaller. So it's been a sort of combination of factors, I think. But not just urging everyone to carry on listening to the podcast deep into the third week, but we hope you do. I mean, you hope you do so, because on the days when nothing much happens in the race, we'll have to work that bit harder to find some interesting things to talk about.
A nice dinner would improve my feel-good factor, but fair, Lionel, we might not get one tonight because there have been a few technical problems and times.
Well, I've been slightly rusty after 2 days.
Time's ticking on. It is. It might be a pizza. We've not had a pizza so far on this year. Last night, I went to a fantastic osteria in Gradara.
Oh, you've run this advert for me.
I had these wonderful, they weren't ravioli, they were raviolacci. And if you put accio on the end of any word in Italy, it means kind of like nasty, kind of like sort of savage, like, so sort of savage ravioli, or sort of.
Meaning what? Big or overly stuffed? Or?
It was difficult to tell from the actual dish itself, but it's almost a term of endearment. But it can also mean, you know, something which packs more of a punch than the normal version.
And did it live up to that?
It did, yeah, but we're not going to get it. I was hoping to go back there tonight. It was the L'Osteria del Gufo, I think, the osteria of the owl. But
this is your way of making me feel even worse error earlier on, which has delayed us somewhat.
Lovely glass
this evening
of Sangiovese. Fantastic. Fantastic amuse-bouche.
We've got a rest day in Ravenna coming up tomorrow.
Nicely cured, nice digestivo after the meal.
Daniel, Grandpa. I feel worse than the Lotto Soudal mechanic who left Campanet's bike in the big ring.
Tiramisu.
I think on that note, we should probably call it a night. Just before we go, firstly, a big congratulations to our leader, Richard Moore, the Buffalo, and colleagues Orla Shenoui and Rose Manley. Last night was the British Podcast Awards, which we've been a finalist in for all 3 years since the Podcast Awards were created. Last year, we won a bronze medal, and last night, the Cycling Podcast Féminin won a bronze medal in the sport category. So we are absolutely delighted, thoroughly deserved. I personally think they should have won silver or gold, really. But, you know, I'm not going to quibble with the judges. Their decision is final. But well done to Richard Orla and Rose and the production team who work on the Cycling Podcast Féminin. Before we go, just a big thank you to our friends of the podcast. If you would like to sign up as a friend of the podcast, go to thecyclingpodcast.com/friends. And if you listen to Daniel's chat with our Dutch colleague Leon about Jumbo-Visma, you might be interested in Richard's Friends of the Podcast special with the Jumbo-Visma team. He spent a few days with them during their training camp at the start of the year and really spoke to the coaches and got under the skin of their plan to put together a real credible challenge to win one of the Grand Tours, and they're doing a pretty good job of that so far. But before we go, we would like to thank all of our friends of the podcast, but in particular this evening we would like to thank Art McWhirter, Luis Fernandez, John Edge, Nicholas Long, Damian Tilson and Jamie Anderson.
Roger Goral, Eric Berger, Shane Duff, Martin Davidson, Hamish Wintle, Yuka Peel.
Thank you very much. And if the pronunciation police are on duty this late in the evening, then, well, you know where you can find us, and we won't come without a fight. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow with our press conference episode where we answer all your questions.
Biscotti, affogato.
Oh, Daniel, don't.
Formaggi, salumi.
On that note, sorry, Daniel. Se lo mangiano le femmine.